Welcome everyone joining us here tonight on the Kings County Radio Club's Technical Question and Answer Net. My name is Roy, my call sign is AC2GS, and I will be your net control operator for this informal net. I will be your host, and Eugene, KD2MDV, will be my co-host on this exploration into amateur radio technology. The purpose of this net is to provide a platform for discussion and to offer our answers as well as promote a conversation among all participants of this net. The club maintains an archive of these technical nets on its web pages, and we also offer original articles and reviews on many topics covered during these technical nets. Also, we will be offering a streaming service for those who cannot receive our repeater's signal. Just point your browser to stream.kc2rc.com. We also have an EchoLink node available for use. Just point your EchoLink application to the node kc2rc-r. This net is scheduled for the second and fourth Wednesday of each and every month. All of this information can also be found on our club's website, which is www.kc2rc.com. Members as well as non-members are welcome to participate, although we do appreciate it when our fellow hams join our club, and as always, an application is readily available on our club's website. No question is too simple, no question is dumb. All wisdom begins with the asking of questions. If you have a question, it deserves to be answered. Our format tonight will be to ask for participants to check in only if they have questions or comments for the net. Please give us your first name, your call sign, and whether you have a question or a comment. The net will then address each question in order. I will try to provide a cogent answer, and Eugene KD2MDV will join in as well. If any other listener has any further facts or opinions, they will be free to break in with a word comment, and when recognized, offer their knowledge or experiences to us all. If anyone has any suggestions for future topics of interest, please let us know either here or use our email address, which is tech@kc2rc.com. And now I would like to introduce my co-host for this net, Eugene KD2MDV. Good evening, Eugene.
Good evening, Roy. Hope all is well, and hoping for a good, lively net. Better than last time. I'll be standing by, KD2MDV.
Likewise, Eugene. You never know, but usually the summer months are relatively very quiet. So I'm not incredibly optimistic, but we'll give it a go. We give people the opportunity, whether or not they choose to pick it up and run with it or go someplace else and do something else, is up to them. So once again, I continue to be AC2GS. This continues to be the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. We're open for business. If anyone out there has any technical questions or comments or topics for discussion they want to roll around, please hit that push to talk. Introduce yourself.
Hey, this is AC2CV William out here. I have a question for the net, and I'm looking forward to checking in with you and talking a little about it.
Okay, very good, William. I'll ask if there's anyone else that wants to put their name on the list at this time. If not, we'll go to you. Anyone else who'd like to go on the list? Well, I guess there's no one else right now. Maybe a little bit later on, people will wander by and check in and have some questions or comments. What can I do for you, William, today?
Recently, I've been thinking a lot more about audio quality and what I can get out of my radio and how actually my radio sounds on the air. And I noticed that many different people have different setups, and they sound different on the air. And, you know, I'm wondering if there is any kind of standard or something like that that we can try to use to figure out, you know, hey, is this a good rig? Do I need to change this mic? The speaker sounds so tinny, you know. Sometimes people with really good signals, you can hear them clearly, but then the rest of the people come through pretty poorly. And I'm just wondering, you know, what ham radio lore there is about this kind of a problem.
KC2RC.
Well, sound quality to a degree is an aesthetic choice. Some people prefer equalization in one direction, others in another. And there's two major aspects of sound reproduction. That's to limit the amount of any kind of background noise as much as possible and just have a pure signal, have a few. When it comes to things like FM modulation, that's a full capture. So you don't have that background hiss. As you lower your signal to the repeater, you'll notice that it will go from full quieting to a little bit of background hiss to an increasing amount of hiss. And then finally, you'll drop out of the repeater, and before the squelch takes over, it'll just be noise in the background. For that, it's more of a technical skill of having your transmitter capture the receiver of the repeater as much as possible, having a good antenna, having it be located in a good position, and supplying enough power to give you full quieting. Assuming that you have full quieting, the other secondary consideration is how you're equalizing your audio signal. And it's different for different modes because different modes have different bandwidth. Frequency modulation can provide a much wider frequency range than, say, single sideband. Single sideband usually gives you about 2.7 kilohertz of bandwidth, and so you can't really do much for the higher frequencies. You're kind of stuck between 300 hertz and 2.7 kilohertz. That's why amateur radio equalizers are set for the low end. You're not going to get a 10 kilohertz band on a graphic equalizer. So then it's a matter of aesthetics. Some people like a real bassy, tubby voice. Others like to have their consonants be crisp and the sibilants require boosting on the high end of 2.7 kilohertz. And, again, it's either you have a second radio with an antenna far enough away from you that you can listen to your own output, or you rely on some third party to give you some guidance and to tell you if it should go up or down, if it's too high, if it's too low, and what have you.
Thanks a lot for that discussion, Roy. I definitely think that my question is more pointed towards a third-party assistance kind of a situation where maybe there's codes that say the quality of your signal, like maybe there's, I don't know, I don't know all the ham radio jargon, but is there something that says, you know, your signal's 5x5 or great, or, you know, or do you just use S-meter readings, or how do we talk about it between hams?
Well, again, it kind of changes with different modes and different bands. On the HF end, you have your readability. You have your signal strength. You have your and if you're doing CW, you also have tone. So for audio signals, it's RS, readability and strength. Strength could be your signal strength on your S meter, or, you know, if you want to kind of modify that for whatever sake. Readability, again, is not a hard and fast thing. What's very readable to some people is barely readable to others. And also, unfortunately, contesters are... they tend to act in very efficient manners, and efficiency for them is if you can respond at all to the other guy, you inevitably give the other guy the maximum RS code. You just say 5.9 and you move on. I've heard people report 5.9 and ask the person to repeat themselves because they can't understand what they're saying, which would indicate that the RS code is being misused. So I don't know if you could really rely on it. If you have someone you know and you really like the way they sound, or you appreciate their ear, you can ask them for suggestions of how to adjust your equalization and your gain. But, you know, just because a guy is very technical doesn't necessarily mean he's a great guy to use for the effort. Years ago, I was on Limark, and I before the technical net that I helped Dick Hator with, a good friend of mine was in his car, and he kind of said that he'd like to help me adjust my signal, the equalizer and the strength and what have you. And we spent about 5-10 minutes doing that. Unfortunately, he was in a car at the time, which doesn't have the best acoustics. And when I got onto the technical net, Dick, who has never said a bad thing about anyone, just told me at the top of the tech net to go back to the previous way I had configured the radio. So, you know, the moral of the story is the most technically brilliant guy can only do so much if he's listened to your signal in a car.
That does make a lot of sense, and I can see that's definitely a problem. One of the things that I recall when I was working, we were just on the early days of experimenting with various different kinds of voice compression technologies. And the way that the systems worked was they were TDMA systems, and so they had little buffers in them. They were very short buffers, and it went around really fast. But the situation was you were trying to get all the conversations down to the minimum amount of bandwidth to get the most connections over the satellite. And so there was a lot of experiments with, like, 8 kilohertz voice, stuff like that, where, you know, the voice really was started more becoming like sounding like from a vocoder rather than from a microphone. And then as the improvements occurred throughout the whole industry growing up, then step by step, you know, there were different levels of quality. And one of the main indicators we used was the MOS score in telephony. And it was like a 1 to 5, you know.
Okay. We, as far as I know, in ham radio, don't have anything like that. I mean, you know, people say 9 by 5, 5 by 5. There's all kinds of different things. But, you know, my idea of 5 and your idea of 5 might not be quite the same. And especially a contester's idea of 5 is meaningless. If he can barely hear you, he's going to tell you that you have 9 by 5.
I'll say 9 by 5 or 5 by 9. What does that mean, actually? Is that like saying that you're 99.999? Is that what that basically means?
No, it's not that. It's very objective. It's very subjective. It's not objective at all. The 9 is just, are you S9? Are you 20 decibels above S9? Are you S4? Are you S3? The 5 is the readability. 0 is I cannot have the faintest idea what you're saying. And 5 means that you're relatively crystal clear and I can make out everything that you're trying to tell me. But, you know, I mean, it's a very granular and, again, a very subjective. And it's often thrown out the window, especially for contesters. And just in general, people kind of feel bad to tell the other person that their signal is suboptimal. So if they can make out anything that they say, they just, you know, they make them feel happy by telling them that they have a wonderful signal. Even though occasionally, again, you'll hear them say, wonderful signal. Can you say that again? I couldn't quite make it out, which is a kind of contradictory.
It's kind of embarrassing to have to point out to somebody like, hey, you know, you're warbly, or you sound gargled, or you're talking like you're going through a kazoo. And, you know, since other people don't seem to notice it, then I think it's like my loudspeaker. And I'm thinking, like, I got to change my loudspeaker. Then again, somebody comes on that's crystal clear. So it's very confusing to me how to communicate in a way that's that works within the system of things we are accustomed to having discussed on TechNet.
Welcome to the KC2RC repeater system.
Well, I find usually if you know a person well, you know, you can be honest with each other. You're not worried about stepping on egos. And you just kind of tell them, I'm a little concerned with my audio. How do I sound? I think if you ask a perfect stranger on the HFN, how's my signal? You got a better than 50-50 chance having them politely white lie to you and tell you that it's good. But if you prefix it with concern over your audio, you'll have a much better chance. They'll kind of understand that you really want a legitimate answer to that. You know, it's sort of like, you know, when an overweight woman is wearing a dress and you know, she asks you how it looks on her. You tend to say, you look wonderful in it, type of a thing. But, you know, if you can somehow convey that you don't want a white lie, this is not something that you're doing for social graces, but concern over your audio, then people hopefully will help you more. And again, some of these guys have a tin ear, so they might be able to tell you that they don't understand you or something, but there are some people that you could rely upon to give you a good description of if it's good or if it's bad. You know, again, there are people who have a tin ear, and they may find all the stuff that you would be annoyed with to be acceptable. So you have to gauge it by the people that you know and what sounds they tolerate and don't tolerate and how judgmental they might be at times and go with it from there. It's a very difficult thing.
Hey, that's a whole lot nicer, because the world that, you know, I came from, everyone was extremely judgmental. The quality had to be perfect or tut, tut, tut. and, you know, everything had to work perfectly all the time. And, you know, if it sounded poor to one person, everybody had to weigh it and decide whether or not it was really bad or not. And then the client wouldn't pay if they didn't like it. And so it's so different, like being free to just sort of see whatever works and string two tin cans, if you could hear me, then we got a conversation. So it's a little different for me to think about. But I was just wondering, you know, about this for the ham radio stuff. Anyway, I think that's pretty good for the topic discussion. Thank you very much for your time, Roy.
You're welcome, William. You got to realize that there's a significant difference between amateurs and professionals. You were getting paid. The guys you worked with were getting paid. And if the guy paying you all didn't like your work, you'd stop getting paid. In this case here, it's a hobby. I'm not getting paid. You're not getting paid. You could do a great job out of self-pride and curiosity about the technology, or you can do a slapdash job. And most people will still tolerate it. I mean, way back at the very beginning when I was having immense problems with antennas, when guys in the Limark repeater heard a squelch break and just noise a few times, they asked if it was me. So I stopped transmitting with my antenna on my basement awning, and I stayed away from the transmission part of the radio until I could get an antenna that was above the roof. Pride in the quality of one's signal. But a lot of times, people, as long as you can understand what they said, they're happy.
It certainly is true that you're really happy if you can get a message through to somebody else and they understand what you say and say, yeah, got it, or something like that. Yeah, so it is different presentation and everything. But, you know, I just thought the topic was an interesting topic because recently I've wanted to tell people about, you know, their signal quality, and I've been very hesitant. So I think I should just work on diplomatic ways, like asking them and stuff, like you suggested, rather than coming right out with it, because I think the whole point is more like communicating rather than being perfect.
Yeah, but it's nice if you could do both. And I'd also throw out to anyone listening in the background that the only time I think it's not a good idea to criticize a guy's signal is if a guy is already self-criticizing the signal. You know, like I was having a problem on the 10-meter net a couple of months ago where my linear amplifier would go into bypass mode and just it would go from 500 peaks to 10 to 12 watts peak. And I would be saying that on the air, and someone would come on and say, you know, your amplitude is dropping down. We're basically just repeating what I was saying. So it's always a good idea to listen to the other person. I find, unfortunately, some people are so busy thinking about what they should say next that they don't really listen to the other guy.
I think that's extremely true. I mean, sometimes people want to have their idea out there so fast, they just don't want to hear what anybody else wants to say. They want to interrupt and tell you right now. Maybe there's somebody out there that wants to comment, Roy. Let's see.
The perennial optimist. Let's see. I'm AC2GS. My name is Roy. I'm net control operator for the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. If anyone has a comment on this particular subject, feel free to hit that push to talk.
AC2GS, this is Kilo Echo 2. Alpha Hotel, I just came in to listen.
Okay, yeah, well, you're welcome to ask questions if you have one down the line.
I'm really turning on my radio, so I don't really know what the subject is, and I don't even know how many people are listening, so I don't know if I'm jumping the line or anything.
No, there's no line. William, AC2ZB, asked a question about audio quality for voice transmissions, and we were talking about different ways of politely requesting it and polite ways of offering advice on the nature of the audio quality. You know, some people's gain is set too low and they sound like they're whispering. Others are set too high and they're overdriving. wiping the circuits and producing audio distortion. Sometimes their signal strength isn't strong enough, or their antenna isn't really optimally getting to repeaters, and so there's a lot of background hiss and hum. So there's a lot of different ways of audio to be not as good as it should, and a lot of different ways to address it on the air, ham to ham. I don't know how many people are listening. We have three people transmitting off and on, but how many people are listening? There's no indicator for that on the radio. Well, once again, I'm AC2GS. My name is Roy. This is the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. We're here on the second and fourth Wednesday of each and every month at 9 p.m. It's going to be a little erratic as time goes on, because there's going to be a religious holiday, I think, the end of September and the beginning of October, when we usually have a general meeting. So the general meeting will be pushed to the second to Wednesday, so there won't be a technical net for the second weekend of October. But otherwise, we do this on the second and fourth Wednesday of every month at 9 p.m. Anyway, if there's anyone out there with any questions or comments or topic for discussion, please hit that push to talk and introduce yourself.
Kilo Echo 2, Alpha Hotel, Hotel. If no one's asking, I'll ask.
This is the KC2RC repeater. Please use TL88.5.
Yes, please. Feel free to ask. What's your first name, by the way?
Michael. I've been on here a few times, like maybe a while ago.
Okay, Michael. What's your question?
Interesting question. It's not really a techie question, but it's I wanted to know if you know anything about Meshtastic.
Not a great deal. It is a interesting. I don't think you need to have an amateur radio license. It's a kind of. It uses the open frequencies that are allowed for everyone. It uses LoRa, which is a radio modulation method, and it's a mesh that connects different transceivers to each other. So it's vaguely reminiscent of how Wi-Fi circuits work in your home, that, you know, one can branch to another, they can branch to another. And indeed, there is an amateur radio protocol that uses the Wi-Fi frequencies, and you can. The trouble is that you have to have a significant density of operators to have an active and working mesh network. Mesh networks require, you can't have kind of two mesh networks. You have to have a bunch of intermediates to extend it beyond the normal length of a given signal. It's a nice little thing. I think it's somewhat more popular on the West Coast than the East Coast, but we have a couple of club members who are playing around with it, and one guy who's regularly trying to figure out if he could set up some kind of a mesh network for Manhattan as a emergency transmission method.
Sounds good. I just bought one of those little nodes that they sell. It was on Amazon. It's like a little credit card sized node, and I've been playing around with it, and I've been picking up maybe like 50, 60 different nodes, but when I transmit, there's only one of them that's picking me up, and I don't think it's going past him, so I don't know how I'm picking up all the other ones, but I can't really hit the others. I can't transmit to the other ones.
It sort of depends on the situation. They might be outputting a lot more power in their nodes than you are in yours, or the antenna might be more significant, so that it gives them more gain than you have. You know, there's a so-called reciprocity rule that says that, you know, theoretically, if you can receive a signal, you should be able to send a signal. But that's assuming a whole bunch of assumptions that aren't necessarily true, the top being output signals. So it's not that incredible to be able to receive signals but not be able to send them. I mentioned earlier my experiences at the beginning of my ham radio hobby with Limark repeaters. I could hear Limark repeaters wonderfully, but if I transmitted, even if I used a linear amplifier to boost my 5-watt signal to 100 watts, I could barely get in with a lot of noise. So receiving and transmitting is not always symmetrical.
If that's what it is, I was going to do a last resort. I hooked up for my garage. I just got a bunch of poles, made like some sort of 15-foot pole, and I hung it on the end, and I was going to stick it out the top floor window to clear the roof of my house and the neighbor's house. But then that storm started rolling in, and I think it was a good thing I didn't stick that out the window yet.
Yeah, I wouldn't suggest you do it tonight, and I probably wouldn't suggest you do it tomorrow because there's lightning and thunder in the weather report for tomorrow as well. But that would probably be a very good thing. Either elevation with a pole, or if you have a little hilly area in your neighborhood, go take a stroll up that hill and try to see if you can contact more nodes that way. The frequencies are in the point-to-point propagation, the same as UHF and 900 megahertz and 1.2 gigahertz. So the higher you can elevate your antenna, the better chance you have of getting a good signal to the other nodes.
All right, I guess that's that. Just a side note, I think in your area, there are actually, the area where the repeater is on the Brooklyn Bridge, I think there are actually a lot of nodes in that area.
Oh, okay, that's good to know. I really haven't investigated it lately, and it's always subject to change. Like I said, the whole idea of mesh networks took off like gangbusters on the West Coast, where there's a relatively higher density of amateur radio operators per square mile. So I could understand why that might have been the case. But I'm glad to hear that Meshtastic is starting to take off a little bit. One of these days, I'll probably wander through the pages of Amazon and find something that's not too expensive but not too cheap. Although I would caution people against generally buying amateur radio equipment through Amazon. There's really no curation, and so the quality can be anywhere. It could be great quality, it could be awful quality. So for those people listening, if you're going to buy amateur radio equipment, I think it's preferable to buy it through DX Engineering or similar places where there are salesmen who actually have a great understanding of the subject and can offer you some degree of direction and curation versus Amazon, which just gives you the cheapest stuff that they can find.
Absolutely correct. My beginning, I'm still at Amazon level, and that's when I started out, just everything on Amazon. And I've gotten radios, the same exact radio, but terrible quality in one. The other one maybe 2 meters is better than just everything was just a big mix.
Yeah, well, I mean, one of the big problems with Amazon is they've sort of kind of been captured by Chinese manufacturers. I wouldn't be surprised if more than 60% of everything they sold was manufactured in China. China has unfortunate, terrible quality assurance issues. Sometimes their stuff is good, but sometimes their stuff is garbage. And you never quite know. And Amazon doesn't really care. If you want to kind of do a little test to see if Amazon cares, Google something that should be ridiculous, like a 1 terabyte USB stick, and you will find that at least 4 or 5 are mentioned. They cost about, I don't know, 20, 40, 60 bucks. By right, a terabyte thumb drive should cost hundreds of dollars. But the reason that they sell them so cheaply is because they're not a terabyte drive. They usually have an SD card stuck into them, and they have a little bit of extra electronics that lies to the computer and tells its capacity is a terabyte when it's not. So unfortunately, that's Amazon. They aren't curating anything. And if you point out that a company is stealing, they'll refund your money if you bought it, but they won't really shut them down.
All right, thank you. I'll send it over to the next guy, I guess.
Okay, very good, Michael. Thanks for participating. Once again, I am AC2GS, Alpha Charlie 2, Gulf Sierra. Name is Roy, Romeo Oscar Yankee, and I am net control operator for the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. So if there's anyone out there with any technical questions or comments or topics that they'd like to kind of roll around on the air, then please hit that push to talk and say hello.
KCQRC.
Once again, this is AC2GS, and this is the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. We put aside some time on the second and fourth Wednesday at 9 p.m. To help people with their technical problems, technical questions. Some prefer to just Google it. Others prefer to look it up in a book. And others prefer to just try something random and see if it works. But if you want to discuss the technology, this is as good a place as any. We're open for business until there's no real activity. Sometimes we have been known to go as long as from 9 o'clock to 11:30. But other days, we cut it short because there isn't any questions being asked. So, with all that in mind, I will ask again if anyone has any questions or topics of interest or comments to be made. Please hit that push to talk.
This is AC2ZV. I have one last comment. If there's anybody else, I'll let them go first, but I want to say one last thing before you close tonight.
Well, I wouldn't say exactly that I'm about to close right now, but it looks like it's not going to be that far away. So far, no one else, but I'll throw it out once again. If anyone else out there has any comments, questions, topics, please hit that push to talk. Well, William, I guess you might as well say what you were going to say.
So I think I was supposed to be on with you as a co-host the other night or something, but and I just totally spaced that out, and I wanted to apologize because it's crazy that I just got so sucked up in this thing I was working on, I lost track of time, and then I came to the radio, and you were already off the air, and so I wasn't that late, but I was late, and I apologize for that.
Yeah, William. Yeah, that was the last technical net I came on. Eugene passed by, said hello, mentioned that the repeater signal wasn't as good as my output signal, and I stuck around, I think, until about 9:20, and there wasn't any questions, there wasn't anything, and so I called it a night.
I'm glad I was able to catch up with you tonight, because I've been wondering about that question. And the thing I was so caught up in, I've been trying to do this research on AI, and it just seems that it's just unending. Everybody has got all these schemes, and I just really can't understand any of them and how I can get any of that stuff to really work for the situation I'm trying to figure out. So to me, it's just totally not helpful. It's the craziest thing.
Yeah, artificial intelligence is a problematic topic. It's an interesting one. It will probably have a great future eventually, but I think that Sam Altman is a shuckster. I think he's just as bad as Elon. I think you can't really believe anything either of those two guys say. There's not going to be a super intelligence in a year or two that's going to be able to provide us an infinite amount of material. The concept is we're all going to sit on our fat backsides, and artificial super geniuses are going to explain to us how, you know, we could make gold out of lead. It's not going to happen that way. And I'm not even sure whether the present generative artificial intelligence technology is going to be able to do much more in the way of parlor tricks than they've already taught it. I don't think that this is the goose that laid the golden eggs. And I think that there's a lot of guys chasing a lot of money and are going to chase it until the bubble explodes. So I commiserate with you. I don't think artificial intelligence is 100% legitimate at this point. There's a lot of dubious claims and promises being made that will not be fulfilled in the near future.
I think it's interesting, as I read this article about one of these companies that was trying to do this AI chatbot, and the thing was just not working at all, and so they rebranded themselves into an entertainment site rather than actually, truth and wisdom. It's all entertainment, so that's an interesting direction. It can hallucinate all it wants for entertainment, right?
AC2GS. Well, it's sort of going back to the old line that when you have lemons, make lemonade. So, yeah, the problem is that what we are seeing in generative artificial intelligence are large language models, which are really just incredibly glorified. There are word completion software where you type a phrase and your word like a program will offer you a ghosted image of the end of that sentence. Well, they've extrapolated that technology to go from the end of a sentence to the end of a question or a comment or what, and so it generates a probabilistic response to verbal input at the cursor. The problem is it's optimized to be nice to you and polite and reverential. So I discovered this very early with ChatGPT that if you kept on telling it that 1 + 1 = 7, it would apologize profusely for their error of 1 + 1 = 2 and continue for that session with 1 + 1 = 7. So it's not designed to be infallible. Matter of fact, the early front ends for ChatGPT specifically said that it is not infallible. And if you give it a question where it really doesn't have any good probabilities, it will make up. When they say it hallucinates, it simply doesn't have a cogent probability to answer your initial starter sentence. So it just randomizes the response and makes things up that we would call lying, but it's just hallucinating.
It's just entertainment. There are useful functions. I mean, talking to the phone is so much better than typing, as far as I'm concerned. It doesn't screw up enough to make me not want to do it, but it does screw up often enough that I'm annoyed having to correct it. That's what I hope gets better over time. And it does research and stuff like that, but you always have to double-check the research, and it's not clear if it's really true or not until you get lots of sources, it seems to me.
Which sort of defeats the purpose. If you have to curate it, if you have to oversee it, you might as well just write the stuff down yourself. And one of the things that has been noticed, and I have noticed among other people, is as people start to rely more and more on AI, if you don't use things, you kind of lose things. And so people's writing skills are deteriorating over time because they just throw it to ChatGPT. LimeArk has its own e-log, a newsletter. And I used to write technical articles both for the Kings County Radio Club and for the LimeArk Club. And unfortunately, nowadays, the editor over there at the LimeArk newsletter has decided to tell ChatGPT to write articles. And he says that he tweaks them, but I don't know what that means. And I noticed a kind of sterility to the article that I didn't find enjoyable. And I think this is going to be a trend that's going to continue. A lot of people call it AI slop. I call it AI slop. And it's not perfect. It's far, far from. Maybe eventually it will be, and then we'll all kind of devolve into idiots who can just type or sometimes you don't even have to type. You can just talk to it and ask it the question. So we're going to be feeble-minded things eventually if it actually takes off. Any other comments? Any responses out there? Any new questions? Feel free. Hit that push to talk. Yes, William?
I agree with all you guys are saying. What I did find also is that sometimes I'm looking up something online and I'll find a totally fake blog, like a product review or like a place review or whatever it is, and it's totally fake. At the bottom it has like a picture of a guy, like, oh, this is written by so-and-so and he has a dog, and it's definitely fake. Another thing, what I did find interesting is that you can download offline AI apps, and they're quite small. I was surprised actually at the size of them. They're like not even 2 gigabytes or whatever, and that's what I found interesting.
Yeah, there's all kinds of techniques to compress large language models and to run them on a computer that has a graphic card in it. There are big ones, but there are small ones, and it's sort of surprising how useful the small ones can be. There is a module that you could plug into things like Audible, which is a recorder. If you record dialogue on it, there's a plugin module that will transcribe it for you that uses a large language model. They're good. They're not perfect. What William was mentioning earlier was that, you know, they started off years ago and Dragon Technology, I think, with something like a 95% accuracy, which, you know, was not very good. It sounds great, but in action, it's not that great. But even now, it's about 98, 99, and there's enough problems and errors that you still have to read over the whole thing and correct the whole thing. So it's of questionable value. A lot of things nowadays, unless you put in extra time, you can't rely on them. And most people don't have the time or interest to put in the extra time. That's why they go to AIs. And so they settle for things that can be very dangerous. Every so often you'll hear the perpetual story about the lawyer who had ChatGPT write up his legal brief, and it included a couple of cases that didn't exist in reality. Again, because they hallucinate. If you give them a somewhat open-ended topic where they don't readily have a good answer for it, they'll make one up, because the most important thing for that device is to make you happy. And, you know, having a complete job done, even if it's complete nonsense and lies, as far as the AI is concerned, is better than a half-assed job.
The thing I found interesting was, I forgot which AI I was using. Me and my brother, we took like old pictures, like my grandparents and things like that, and we made it into like short clips, and it did a pretty good job. It took a totally black and white picture, made into like a animation where they wave, or like the people in the background will move, sort of like the Harry Potter pictures.
Yeah, those are great. You can it automatically can colorize. It can figure out approximately what it would look like in three dimensions and generate movies. But every so often, if you look real closely, you might find that your grandmother has six fingers. Because for some odd reason, AI has had a continuing problem with a number of fingers and toes and legs, and where they go in relation to the rest of the body. This is something that they've made better, but they haven't actually completely fixed it.
Sometimes you see in the background is people walking, and they morph into each other, and they turn into one person and stuff like that. But it's mostly minor things.
Yeah, you got to give it a good look. Like, you got to put in some effort. Also, it used to be very bad at putting words onto a picture. It would kind of generate them organically. So it would be kind of, to me, it was reminiscent of that guy who had the watches that were melted all over the place. They were very loose fonts. They weren't any standardized font. So it was almost like the text had grown in that position.
All right. I think I have to go now. I appreciate it. Thank you very much. Just one thing I wanted to mention, I think like large parts of Brooklyn have a blackout tonight from that storm. So it could be like people that would want to be on the net actually have a blackout now, so I don't know about that.
Oh, thanks for telling me. I didn't think we were going to get that much. Usually we don't during the summer months. And also, a lot of people don't want to operate their radio equipment when there's lightning storms happening every which way. So I wasn't that terribly optimistic, but nice to hear some people. But thank you for telling me that. I was unaware of it. I haven't looked at the news in the last hour or two. Thank you very much.
This is K2AH873. And by the way, I was I didn't see it on the news. I was actually driving tonight. All of a sudden, like, I'm wondering why this guy has his brights on. And I'm like, this stupid guy. And then the next thing you know, I'm turning on my brights because everything was down to pitch black.
Oh, okay. So you were in the middle of it all.
Okay, 73.
Hopefully we'll talk to you down the line. This is AC2GS with the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. We're still open for business. If anyone's interested, if anyone has a question or a comment or a topic to discuss, please hit that push to talk and say hello. Going once. Going twice. Going three times. This net has been brought to you by the Kings County Radio Club. Our club is an ARRL-affiliated club based in Brooklyn, New York. We meet on the first Wednesday of each and every month. Our next meeting will be September 3rd. It'll be a hybrid meeting and a virtual meeting using Zoom software. Club members will be emailed with the details of the meeting. The physical location of the in-person meeting is the Knights of Columbus at 1511 10th Avenue. Non-members wishing to join a general club meeting can email me, AC2GS, with some form of identification for the required link. Although our meetings informally begin at 7 p.m., our formal regular general meeting starts at 8 p.m. and continues until anywhere from 9 o'clock to 9:30, depending upon the number of points that are covered. We have a weekly 2-meter club net every Tuesday night at 9 p.m. on this repeater. This technical net meets on the second and fourth Wednesday of each and every month at 9 p.m. We also sponsor a 10-meter net every Sunday morning at 11 a.m. on 28.380 upper sideband, occasionally 28.381 megahertz upper sideband. We offer an audio stream of our KC2RC repeater on the internet as well as our 10-meter net. You type into your browser stream.kc2rc.com. Members as well as non-members are welcome to participate, although we do appreciate it when our fellow hams join our club. And as always, an application is readily available on our club's website. We will be offering a VE session to obtain an amateur radio license or upgrade your present license. Our VE session is scheduled for Sunday, August 24th at the Knights of Columbus at 1511 10th Avenue at 12 noon. Contact for a lot, KD2MYF, or you can go to the ARRL VE session page and register. If you would like to contact the host of this technical net, simply address your email to tech@kc2rc.com. We maintain an active website at www.kingscountyradioclub.com or www.kc2rc.com, which offers archives of these technical nets, amateur radio news, original articles, and technical forums. Please visit our website and participate. Our website hosting services are generously donated by the local Brooklyn-based web hosting company, Three Aliens Web Hosting, and we would like to thank them for their generosity. As the great philosopher Jimi Hendrix once said, knowledge speaks, but wisdom listens. So try to listen more and talk less. Time to roll this up and shut it down for tonight, but we'll be back to do it again August 27th, and you're all welcome to join us. Thanks to all the people that participated tonight, especially my co-host, Eugene, KD2MDV. Without you guys, I'd just be talking to myself. So this is Roy, AC2GS, going clear and getting the heck out of here.
This is the KC2RC repeater. Please use PL88.5.